to start with, could you tell me a little bit about yourself and then wrap it up with one word which best describes you?
You say a little bit about myself.
What you do now?
Oh, okay. Also, I'm a broadcaster, primarily. I work with multimedia, the multimedia group. I'm a news editor, and I have responsibilities across both radio and TV and online. Well, apart from that, so that's my day job.
Okay.
And, but I do lots of other things. One, I string for CNN, I string for the BBC, or I do freelance for the BBC, for CNN. So they can call me today and tell me, okay, there's something happening in your country, or there's something happening in Accra. We want you to tell us more about it, want you to report on it. And if I'm available, yes, I'll do it for them.
So when did you start doing this for CNN and BBC?
Oh, it's been a while now. I'd say 2010 thereabout. Yeah.
So it's been 6 years.
Yeah. So that's for CNN. For BBC, I actually started off doing weekly reports for them. Weekly business news analysis.
Okay.
So some business news in Ghana that they want some clarity. So they'll call me up on the World Business Report. So I was doing that on a weekly basis.
Okay.
And that also, yes, was from around 2010. No, yeah, maybe 2012 rather. I did that for about 2-3 years. I don't do it that regularly these days, but it keeps coming up. I'm seeing as and when, like I said, if they have something they want me to help them out with, I'm available to do that. So that's with media. Apart from all of that too, or by virtue of those relationships I have with people or with these international media houses, sometimes they come to me to do stuff for them. CNN, for instance, if they're coming to town, they come to town once in a while and they want to do features inside Africa, CNN Marketplace, CNN African Voices. They will get in touch with me and they want to find out, okay, we have these ideas. What do you make of these ideas? Asking for features. Do you have any suggestions how we can do it better? Yeah, so we have those conversations and I shape them. And then when they come to town, I help them to execute them as well. So,
do you get in contact with CNN?
I believe it was after... I mean, they got in touch with me. And this was after winning the 2008 CNN Radio African Journalist of the Year.
Okay.
For the Radio General News. So it was a few months, I'd say, probably about a year later. They just got in touch and they said, they just started from there. They said, okay, we know there's this thing happening in Accra, and if you can put together a report for us, or you can tell us what it is that's happening. And that was the first contact, and they kept coming again and again and again and again. I mean, so that's been it. But by virtue of where we find ourselves and what our country is, you don't get the kind of stories that really will break on CNN. So it's not very often that stuff about us make it onto CNN. And so a lot of the time, you'd say I'm redundant because we don't have the typical, you know, war stories or crisis. We don't have, you know, a lot of crisis happening in our country for people to want to report on it. But yes, CNN rather tends to do a lot of features on Ghana, and which I believe puts Ghana in very, very, very good light.
Okay. So, can you tell me about your upbringing? How was it like?
We come from a very humble family, and or rather, I'd say it started off, I think I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth.
Okay.
I can say that. And but then somewhere along the line, and I keep on making this analogy, somewhere along the line the silver spoon was sticking out of my mouth and I got a bronze spoon.
Okay.
Because life became quite difficult for us.
What actually happened?
Well, it's I really can't tell, but you know, it wasn't the silver spoon I'm talking about. It wasn't. It's not as if you know, we're born in luxury and all that. But things were not difficult for us. My dad had a good job, and my mom was, you know, had an okay job. It was just a clerk, a typist. But things were okay. At least my dad owned a car at the time. But somewhere along the line, he didn't have the job that he had anymore. And that's been it.
Did you always want to be a broadcast journalist, or you had other dreams growing up?
I had other dreams. I wanted to be a pilot. And for a very interesting reason. At the time, I believe things were quite tough for us and food was a priority. And so I felt that, if I could be the pilot. And I had this uncle who kept on telling us stories about, he was a diplomat, so he flew, he was a frequent flyer. And he kept on telling us stories about how, you know, when you're in a plane, they give you all sorts of food and, you know, I've heard those stories over and over again. Anything at all you ask in a plane, you're going to get any food at all. So I said, like, okay, cool. So imagine if I was the pilot, you know? It means I could eat anything at all on the plane. So that was probably one of the main factors that motivated me to want to be a pilot. And so while I was growing up, I was trying to follow that science, you know, doing science and all that, just so I'll be on that path. Yes. But then it got to a point my mom wanted me to become an accountant, rather. So it was between my dad and my mom. My dad wanted me to do science. My mom wanted me to do accounting. Eventually, my mom won. Well, I did some science, but eventually my mom won. And so yes, I actually wanted to be a pilot. That's what I wanted to.
So how did you land into journalism?
Right. So after school, after Kwapman School, after my O level, I was home, and I watched a lot of TV. In fact, CNN had become available on what we call UHF at the time. And it took quite some tuning of your TV and some manipulation of your antenna to get the signal on UHF. And I used to do that. I was struggling. Eventually, I'd get it looking, you know, quite okay. Then I'll sit behind it and watch. And I used to follow them a lot. It was during those times that I told myself, I took out my result slip and I said, what was my best subject? And it turned out it was, well, it was English. And so I said, well, if English is my best subject, I probably should be pursuing something along those lines, which meant that broadcasting was the default, or journalism. So I had that in mind. and I tried to pursue it at that time. You know, as young as I was, and at O level, I was like, yeah, maybe I should just give it a shot. GBC was looking for news presenters, and I applied, and, you know, nothing became of it. So that was for GBC. And it's sometime later on, I had not given up on that. TV3 was also looking for news presenters. Or they were not looking for news presenters, but I actually wrote to them because they had come, they were new, and I was like, okay, maybe there will be opportunities there. And at the time, I had read this book about, you know, being confident in yourself and all that. So, and the book told me that I should go for things that I wanted. So I said, well, let me just walk up to TV3 and try and find my way there and get a job there and all that. I remember when I got there to the front desk, I told them I wanted to see somebody in there. The trick was to go past the front desk person. Once I go past the front desk person and I met somebody, you know, who was of significance, the person could say, yeah, why not? I mean, you have what it takes, so yeah, come on board. Because a lot of the time, the front desk people will try and frustrate you. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea was to go past the front desk person. I recall the person who was at the front desk. This person, I wasn't successful. Tried all I could. Eventually, the person said, if it's a job that I want, I should go and write a letter, an application letter, and come and leave it with her. So I just went around. I mean, right there, somewhere close to TV3, I went to a communication center, you know, got to write a letter, came back and dropped it and left. Well, nothing became of that. And so eventually I was working with this company, Mobile Water.
Oh, you worked with them too?
I worked with Mobile Water. I was doing virtually everything. I went to Mobile Water as an account clerk. I ended up becoming distribution manager, finance manager, maintenance manager.
Was it all at once, or you actually grew into those ranks?
No, so I got there, and just by default, I enjoy tinkering, mm-hmm. and I like fidgeting with stuff. And I believe I have the knack for fixing things. So it just happened that there was an issue and I could fix it. So I fixed it. And over time, that's how come I became maintenance manager. So that if there's a problem, yeah, they're going to call me to come and help them fix it. So, and the other bits also just came like that. Distribution manager. I'm in the office and I'm looking at the accounts. And people will be calling the office and they say they want water. And yet the people who we send out there to go and distribute the water, they come back. And these were the very early stages of, I mean, sachet water. Sachet water had just been introduced to people. It was new to them. And these people will go out. I'm getting calls that the people out there want water. The customers want water. These people go out, come back around 4, and they say, well, if I can't go out anymore, because if I go out, I'm not going to come back before 5 o'clock. And so, they just said they thought I had a good voice, so I could be a news anchor. They didn't know that. I had that at the back of my mind all that while. So, started work. It was first March 1999. That was when I started work there.
Wow.
1999. The first day I got in, my supervisor, or my boss at the time, said he thought I had a good voice, and that anytime there'll be an audition for news presenters, I should give it a shot. Well, he would encourage me to give it a shot.
What's the name of your boss?
I've forgotten his name. But he was a Malaysian at the time.
Okay.
And so that was it. There were several auditions. And they didn't pick, a lot of the time they didn't pick anybody anyway. So I think it was a fourth audition or so. That was when they settled on myself and Gideon. And I think there was one other lady. They picked all of us at the same time. So I got in to the March, first March 1999, as a production assistant. 6 months after that, 1st September 1999, I got my first bulletin.
How did you feel? How was the feeling like?
It was great. It was tension packed. Because it was the first time I was going on air live and everybody else was going to be watching me. We had done auditions before then in mock runs. But this was the real thing. So I remember when I was done with it, then I yelled.
Why?
Like the tension was all inside me for a long time. Mm. And once I was done with it, that was it.
Okay. So I learned Kamala Dumont, the late Kamala Dumont, helped you to gain employment with Multimedia Group. How true is that?
Okay, so I was at TV3 at the time, and I was looking for other opportunities. There was an issue with TV3. I wanted to go to school. And I went to TV3 to support me. TV3 had sponsored people to go out to school, or they had given assistance to people, journalists, to go out there to go in school in Cardiff and the rest. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go to Cardiff. Because whilst in Cardiff, you wouldn't have the benefit of my human resource. So I'll do part-time schooling. I'll go to Gimpa. I got admission at Gimpa, Green Hill College. I'll do part-time schooling. So just support me and pay part of my school fees. I mean, so that I can be going to school and working for you at the same time. He said no. Okay, so in that case, then allow me to take up a second job so that I can use that to finance my. He said no. So I was looking around for which other media house I could work with, and I didn't see myself working with any other media house apart from. I looked around and decided that it was Joy FM that I want to be associated with. So I approached Kamala. You know, he was coming to TV3 once in a while. Sure, he came for an interview. He came to do some show. So I approached him and told him this was the plan. And if they were looking at hiring people, then he said, oh, yeah, I mean, we would love to have you anytime. Oh, that was it. They asked me to come over. They arranged an interview. I went for that interview. And that was it. I just got the job. And I was doing the news bulletins on a show. So I'll do 6 a.m., which was the first bulletin of the day. I'll do 6:50. So I do the bulletin, and then I introduce him. He comes to do his, starts his morning show. Then 6:50. I'll come in to do local news summaries. Or he introduced me to come and do local news summaries. Then after 6:50, I'll come in at 8 o'clock to come and do business report. And then I'll do the last bulletin, which was 10 o'clock, as he wrapped up his show. So he will wrap up, and then Israelias has to bring us the news at 10. Then I deliver the news, I present the news, and he goes away. So that was the way it was working. And yeah.
So So let's go back. How was life in Okapiman school?
It was interesting. For the first time, I had to leave my family and go somewhere and be on my own. I'd had to leave my family at some point, but I'll go on holidays to family friends. I'll be there. But this environment was completely different. And the first few years, a 4 month phone too, was quite difficult for me, but I mean thereafter I just got into the groove. And so a lot of the time, the first few years, I was concentrating on dodging seniors. And no, I had to go and fetch water at the well, and I did all I could to avoid the dorms as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And that kind of lifestyle was quite difficult, and it was impacting on my education. But once I got settled in and I knew my way around, and I couldn't be bothered about the seniors, I knew my way around the seniors, then I started concentrating on classwork, and it was a good time. So I think I did quite well in at Okapiman school.
Okay.
So much so that at the end of Form 5, after the O-levels, one of the biggest achievements for me around that time was I was coming from Osu to Dokko.
Oh, you lived at Osu.
I'm going to Dokko. Sometimes I wouldn't get money for transportation to school, a lot of the time. And I think all that impacted. And Accra Academy, we have to attend a lot of classes. I couldn't find money to attend most of them. It was a tough school for me.
So where did you have your tertiary education?
After Accra Academy. My grades were not good enough. I didn't fail, but I mean the grades were not impressive. I mean, for somebody who came out of O-level distinction, the grades I had were poor. I had to rewrite. Then I decided that, okay, maybe let me just go pursue the professional course, accountancy. So I started that. So I did quite a bit of accounting. It didn't work out because I wrote the exam, I didn't pass. Yeah, for the first level. And I was so confident. I had been told that ICA, becoming a chartered accountant, was so difficult. People will go and write the exams, about 200 will write, only one will pass. And I was like, okay. I was so determined that I was saying that if that one person who would pass should be me. Well, I wasn't lucky. But I was so confident, and I had moved on to, so confident that after sitting for the first level one, I started lectures for level two straight away. You know, believing that I was going to pass, you know. Came so disappointed. I had to forget about ICA. Then I started, that was when I started working with Mobile Water. Because I had learned so much accounting. I knew so much accounting that I could put it into practice. So then that's how come I ended up there.
Okay, so do you have plans of imparting your knowledge in communications to the next generation?
Well, I do that. I do that because by virtue of my role as a news editor. Multimedia, I'm always training and bringing up people. And there are people too who are not with multimedia, who look up to me, who come to me for guidance. So yeah, I'm doing that already.
So you don't see yourself establishing a school?
No.
Okay. So, tell me, what has been the biggest letdown in your career so far?
Letdown? I don't see one.
So it's all been good?
Yes. I don't see one.
Okay. So have you ever made any decision that you would want to go back to change? Any worse decision concerning your career?
No.
Wow. Okay, interesting. Do you see yourself being poached from multimedia?
No.
Why?
It will take a lot for anybody to want to move me away from multimedia. I must be very convinced about what the company
has to offer.
This new company has to offer. It's not just about money. I'm not so interested in money, but about the contribution of that company, the longevity of that company, or the vision of that company. And I must be assured that they're serious about what they want to do.
Okay.
Oh, but of course, if CNN comes and wants to take me, oh yeah.
You would go.
Definitely.
Okay, so how do you manage being both a family man and a journalist?
I don't do anything extraordinary. I just make sure I make a lot of time for the family. That's all. And I'm not really an outgoing or somebody who hangs out a lot. So, apart from work, I'm home. So that way I get to spend as much time out as I can with the family.
How many kids do you have?
Three.
Ages?
I have 11, 10, and 7.
11, 10, and 7.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, would you ever choose a career for?
What is interesting?
I mean, the age difference, the 10 and 11.
What's so strange about that?
It's just a year.
Yeah. Family planning. Yeah. Know when you want to have your family and have them. That's it.
Okay.
That's family planning.
So do you see yourself choosing a career for your children?
No. I only advise them. I advise them, but I'll leave them to take that decision what they want to be.
Well, looking at someone like me, I read geography in school and then I'm now in the media. So do you think there's a need for students to read courses connected to their preferred future career? Or you think they should just reading it at all?
Your first degree doesn't really matter. Your first degree doesn't really matter. I mean, and for people wanting to do journalism, I don't think it's really necessary to go to journalism school. I'm not saying it's bad to go to journalism, but it's not really necessary.
So why is it not really necessary?
You don't need to be... to have gone to GIJ.
You don't think it's a requirement? Like,
no. You don't need to have gone to GIJ to become a journalist. Indeed, if you look around, some of the finest journalists we have never went to GIJ.
Okay, so tell me three things you like about your parent.
Give me a chance to impact society.
That's one.
Now, by... I'm also able to, that the influence that I have, to be able to use it positively. That's another one. The fact that if there's a situation, there's some chaos, and I show up, and because I've been able to, I believe I'm able to do this because of the way I've been able to carry myself over the years and earn some respect. So if there's some chaos or there's some misunderstanding between people, can't seem to agree because there's no clarity on a particular issue. People may be arguing to the point where they want to exchange blows because of something. And then I show up and I explain to them, but see, this is this and that is that. And I'm able to resolve the issues right there and then. That is something, that's another thing I love about my job.
I think a few years ago, I read a story, I mean your story. You had to go undercover to rescue this little girl.
Yeah.
I can't really remember the story, okay. But how do you do it? Like, how did you do it? How did it all come about?
Okay, so this one wasn't really an undercover thing.
Okay.
But just one of those stories that had come up and we had to go. Somebody had to go and report on it. Okay. And I was asked to go and take care of it. So I just went there. I had been told that there was this girl who was being abused by the family she's staying with, by her guardians. Said I should come there right now because the girl had been left on her own, and that was the best time for me to show up. So I went there, and here was this girl who was in the compound of a house that had been locked. She couldn't go into the house, she didn't have access to the house, and she couldn't come out of the gate. So I got there, and to speak with her, the pickup backed up to the gate, and I stood in the bucket of the pickup so I could reach over the gate to speak with the girl. So So I asked her questions, I interacted with her and everything else. When I finished, I felt that no, at that point, we had to rescue the girl. So I didn't chase my story at that point. Or, yes, I interviewed her over the gate. But I left, went to Dofsu, and went to discuss with them. That was the domestic violence and victim support unit. So I went there. I went to report the issue, and I requested that they give me some police officers to go with to go and rescue the girl. So we arranged everything. The following day, I came for the police officers, sent them to the place, and they got to see the girl's situation. But when we went there, we were going to rescue the girl. But the family was there at the time. And so it became sort of a confrontation, and you know, the girl was just blowing one of the girls there, the daughter of the woman of the house. She was just blowing her top and insulting and, you know, justifying why. Yeah, she didn't deny the treatment they were giving to the girl. I mean, at some point, at some point they would put, I was told that they would put a knife on fire and place it under her feet and let it burn as punishment for, apparently she had gone to steal meat from soup. So that was the kind of punishment they had to exact. And we rescued the girl, and we realized that apparently the girl needed medical attention right away. So we sent her to the Accra, to the police hospital in Accra, and the doctors told her that if we had not brought the girl would have died probably in a few days. Because what she was suffering from, she really didn't know. Because the sore she had endured over the period were eating into her. And so, yeah, that was that story. And they prosecuted the family.
So where is the girl now?
No idea, actually. At some point, they took the girl, well, of course, they immediately took the girl, sent her to a shelter. Later on, I was told they returned her to her grandmother.
When it's all over for you, and then you're very old and so great that you can't even run at all, how would you want to be remembered?
To be remembered as that journalist who once moderated the presidential debates and did a wonderful job and contributed his quota to bringing peace to this country with the way he reported and the way he carried himself. And I want to be remembered as a great broadcaster, somebody who did the job differently or had a unique way or brought something unique to broadcasting. Yeah, I don't want much. Just
you moderated the presidential debate?
Yeah.
Which year?
That was in 2008. I moderated the presidential debate and then the vice presidential debate. So there were three debates that year. There was one in Accra, presidential debates, one in Accra. And this was when our late president, Atta Mills, was running. So he ran against Nana Akufo-Addo. Yeah. And there were two others. So yeah, I moderated the... There was one in Accra. There was one in Tamale. And then there was one in Cape Coast. the Accra and Tamale one were the presidential debates. And then the one in Cape Coast was a vice presidential debate. So I moderated the Tamale debate and then the Cape Coast debate. That was in 2008. And I recall one of the things that I did that I want to remember it for, giving credit, I want to claim some credit for, is at the end of the debate in Tamale, there was so much tension in the country. And, you know, people felt like this country was going to descend into a civil war. So I seized the moment and I said, it was not on the script. I just told the candidates that I wanted them to hold their hands and raise them up. They hold hands together, raise them up, and pledge for a peaceful election. It's not on the script. And, a few of the people there, the aides of the candidates, were not very excited that I'd introduce this element because it wasn't part of it. But yeah, I got them to hold hands and pledge for peace.
So, speaking of peace, how do you foresee this year's election? Because there's already like so much happening.
I think we'll be fine. I mean, the kind of tension I saw in 2008, there's nothing like that happening now. This kind of tension we witnessed in this country in 2008, we don't have anything like that happening now.
So you think it's all going to be fine?
I think we're going to be fine.
Okay. So how is a typical weekend like for you?
A lot of the time, home. Home with the family, taking things very easy. I just like to be at home, maybe sleeping as often as I can or as much as I can.
So you're watching. More of an introvert.
Well, I'm not exactly an introvert. Otherwise, I'm just home. Just home, watching movies or doing some work. And you know, apart from all these other things I tell you that I do, I also consult for some companies. So, as a media consultancy. So sometimes I have to write, sometimes I have to strategize. And yes, best time to do that.
So you're never out chilling with your friends, with your colleagues?
Nah. Once in a while, if there's a multimedia is organizing something, yes, I'd want to be part of it. Or once in a while when my old school mates are organizing something, yeah, I'd want to show up. But most of the time, just home.
Okay. So, any advice for the young ones who look up to you?
For the young ones, I just advise them to be diligent in all that they do, and ensure that whatever they do speaks for themselves or will speak for them. They should do things that will set them apart from everybody else. There's a lot of mediocrity in this country. So if you just be a little bit more diligent, it takes just a little bit more diligence for you to set yourselves apart or set yourself apart from everybody else. So diligence in all that you do, and that's all you need. I mean, we can't be perfect, but try and make things as perfect as they can, and let people begin to see that in you. Say, okay, this guy is different, and that's the best advice I'd give anybody else. And keep your head screwed up right.
My last question. What are the three things you would never step out without? The three most important things you would never leave without.
I don't have much.
You don't have much, but okay, please keep thinking about that. Let me come back again. Who's your role model? Did you look up to anyone? Do you have anyone who...
Well, I looked up to a number of people. Okay. I looked up to anybody I thought I could learn something from. So, anybody at all I could learn something from. I'm like, okay, I like this thing about this guy. So, I like to listen to him and hear what he can share. You see people and they have something, there's something about them that makes them different, or that you believe, it's a quality that you believe will help advance you and make you better. So I picked that from somebody. People ask, okay, so who's the broadcaster you look up to? There was no one particular broadcaster I was looking up to. I told you, I was watching CNN a lot. I was listening to the BBC too a lot. And I was looking for, I wanted to be sure about, I want to get, I was looking for a way of speaking that would bring clarity to people, and that would make my people, well, my audiences appreciate me. And so I picked a bit from this presenter, that presenter, everybody else. And I'm watching people, I'm listening to people, I'm picking up pronunciations. The school we went to, or the schools we would attend, or the schools we attended, for a lot of us, they didn't really teach us pronunciations, or we didn't have teachers who taught us the right pronunciations. So we picked something from them and it stuck with us. So you see people making serious blunders when it comes to pronunciations, including broadcasters. But are they really to blame? That's the way they taught. They were taught. That's the way they heard their teacher pronounce me. There's this word which I always make reference to. Q-U-A-Y. For most people, if you write Q-U-A-Y, you'll say quay.
That's what's in my head.
Yes. But that's at the harbor. It's key. Yeah. But for most people, they'll say quay. Because that's what they know. That's what they think. That's the way they think
it's key.
Yes. But there are lots of words that are written in a certain way but are pronounced differently. So I learned. I didn't know this until I was broadcasting. I was on air and I was making this blunder, and somebody drew my attention to it. That is not it's not quay, it's key.
Okay.
And I've had a similar challenge with another word, facade. So, it was one of those times, sitting behind TV watching CNN for like 4 or 5 hours, or virtually the whole day. And I mean, those were the times CNN was showing, had shows like Style with Elsa Clench. They had headline news. A whole lot. And I remember, and when I hear new words, I'm listening to the BBC, I'm watching news, and they pronounce new words that I'm not familiar with. When I hear a word, I want to situate the pronunciation, or the spelling. So I'd heard facade for a long time. Said, which word to is facade? So I picked up a dictionary. I was looking for facade. So I started off. I said, facade. It must be F-A-S-S-A-D. I looked up facade or something like F-A-S-S-A-D. I said, oh, so where is this word? I said, let me make it one S. F-A-S-A-D. There was no word like that. Then I said, okay, maybe it's P-H. So, P-H-A-S-S-A-D. No. P-H-A-S-A-D. No. I said, ah. So, where could this word be? And in trying to still scrutinize and look out for the word, I went to F-A, and I was just following through. Then I came across F-A-C with an accent on top of it. F-A-C-A-D. That's the word called facade. So, wow. But these are things that if you make it a point to want to learn, you get to know. But and that's because you've come across the word and you want to understand the word and appreciate the word. So you go out there to want to learn more about it. So that happens.
Okay.
That's the way I've learned. And I taught myself a lot too. So if there's something, I'll try and look it up or try and read for myself. Growing up, I used to read a lot. I was reading encyclopedias, and like I said, I was listening to the BBC. My sister introduced me to BBC, the BBC. I was listening to BBC on shortwave radio. Not these days that we have BBC on a dial, FM. You tune, and at some point, they'll be on one wave. They will broadcast on that wave for a while, and after a while, they'll end transmission on that wave. And then on that frequency, and then you have to go and look for them on another frequency. That was the way I was listening to the BBC. That was way back. These days, BBC is on FM, on 1.3, 24 hours a day. So easy to get it. So, yeah.
Let's go back to the three things.
The three things. Well, I tend not to leave the house a lot myself. But on a regular basis, I would leave the house with my computer and my phone and a recorder.